Thank you very much, Joel. Page up, page down, right? Page down, okay. I really want to thank all of you for all the courtesies and the kindnesses that you have extended to me these last 2 days. It's been a real pleasure being with this group, especially as I did not know any of you before Saturday morning. And it's been a very, very, very rewarding weekend for me. I'm really glad that I came, because you know that I own group of Coxes. I've talked about the Texas group for many, many years. And they always tell me how good they were and these and different types of things. And once in a while, somebody from Texas actually goes down there. So, you know, it's kind of hurting my envy and so forth to find out what is this Texas group and who are they and what do they do. And so now I finally found out. And I really appreciate what I found out. And one of the first things that all of you have asked, and it's been right down the line, where do you come from in California? And I come right from almost the center of the state. And I'm 80-some-odd miles north of Fresno, 85 miles or so forth from south of Stockton, and 125 miles south of Sacramento. So that's where I come from. In Las Banas, you know, people say the priest used to come over the hill, you know, and it's hot and dusty, they got over the hill, and there's a springs over there, and they used to come over there, and they'd set camp for the night, and they'd take a bath in those springs. And so that's where Las Banas got its name, the baths. It's not the bathroom, so it's not the toilet, it's the baths. You know, one of the things that Les asked me to do is to tell all about how the Cox family from Ione got into California. And he says, keep it short. Now, I told him that really wasn't a problem because I've been short all my life. And when I was researching all of this and trying to get it together and putting it together, and I get brought up this little story that I always tell about this Cox family member from Texas. He wasn't feeling too good. So he went to the doctor. His wife took him to the doctor. And so he went in, and you know, the doctor stayed with him for about 30 minutes. And finally he came out, and the doctor says, I want to see your wife. And so, you know, this guy says, what do you want to see my wife for? So the wife goes in and the doctor talks to her. He says, now your husband is pretty sick. And what is going to make him well, and unless you do these things that I'm going to tell you, he's going to die. You know, if he wants to make love, make love. If he wants breakfast in bed, give him breakfast in bed. Just cater to his every whim. And so he said, now if you don't do this, he's surely going to die. So she went out, and they started to go home and get in the car and so forth. And he kept pestering his wife, what did the doctor tell you? What did the doctor tell you? And he just kept, you know how Coxes are, they are, and they're persistent. And he says, finally her patient got kind of thin, and she said, he said, you're going to die. Anyway, it's been an interesting deal. And the research deal, you know, that's my father and my mother on the screen there. And my father was born in August the 1st of 1900. And he always tells me that that's when Ford made the first car at that time right over there. Now then, that's my mother. My mother was born on Christmas Eve, you know, the 23rd of December. And she really hated that because that meant that she only got one gift for Christmas, you know. She didn't get a birthday gift and things like that like everybody else did. But anyway, they got together in about 19 years old, they got married in Arkansas. And then they lived in Ione Now, we lived in a little part of the grandfather's estate, the one that he inherited or he homesteaded, one of the two. I never have found that out. And that's where we lived there for many, many years. In a few years, I went back there, and I tried to find that old homestead, and I just couldn't find it. Everything was grown up, everything was grown over, and everything was gone. The pond that was there, that we used to fish in, and stuff like that, the old mulberry tree was big, and we used to eat off of that. And even the houses were gone. I couldn't even find out where they used to be. So now that's my quest for the next year or two. I'm going to go back and try to find it out. And one of the things Les and Joe said, how did you get to California? Well, most of you have heard of Route 66. Route 66 was the way we got to California. And we didn't come because of the Dust Bowl, because my dad and his uncle, his brother, and my aunt Lulu all lived on the old homestead, and they lived very close together, and they were very close together. They had that little camaraderie. And my uncle and my dad had a little side activity going on besides farming. They farmed cane and cattle and stuff like that, but they also did some bootlegging. And and that was common in those days, I guess, because they did a lot of bootlegging. And they knew all of the sheriffs in the whole area, like yesterday we talked about the sheriffs. They knew all of them. They had them all paid off. The judges were in their pocket. But when Prohibition came along, the feds came in. And when the feds came in, they couldn't buy those off. So my uncle got caught. And so they took him to the calaboose. And when he got out, he skipped. And a few years later, my dad followed. So that's the way we started in California. We sold out, we started in California, and I'm going to show you just a little bit of that's me on the right-hand side there. And that's the house we moved into after we moved out of the original house. After my grandfather died in 1926, my grandfather died, my Aunt Lula that used to live in here in Upper Johnny, they moved over to the old homestead place, and we moved into this house. And this is us, and this is me. That's me on the right-hand side of my right-hand side. And I don't know how old I was. I don't know how old my mother and father were when that picture was taken, because not too many records were kept in those days. But anyway, that's me, and that's my sister. The middle sister is Anna Mae, and the one close to my dad is Hazel. Those are the two older sisters than I. Hazel is 3 years older than I, and Anna Mae is two. Now, in the early years, we did a lot of farming there, and we had a great time. But times change. Hit the right one. That's me. Now I don't know. We don't know how old I was, because I don't even know how I was born, because in those days we didn't have any hospitals I knew about in Boonville or in Ione. I don't know if I had a doctor in Ione at that particular time. So first thing I know, when I got into the service, I had to get a delayed birth certificate. And so I got my grandmother on my dad's side to sign everything. And so that's the way we went there. And then I got to thinking, when I started doing this little project, what happened? How was I born? Was I born with a doctor? Was I born by a midwife? I know I wasn't born in a hospital, because there are no hospitals around. So how did I come about being? And that's kind of been a little something that I really, really do miss, because I really should have talked to my mother years ago when she's still alive, and I should have talked to my grandmother, which I had plenty of time, because I lived with my grandmother last year in high school. But I just never did find out, and I never did care, and now I really wish I had. This is the school that I first started in Nyon, Arkansas. That's the old school. That school now is a community center. That's where they hold a Cox family reunion, in that school, old schoolhouse. They've kind of remodeled it, now it's a community center. And that's me, 1990. I own elementary school. And that was, we walked to school. And we walked home. And we walked with a group of other people. And we had some fights along the way. And we had some arguments along the way. But finally we made home and we got back. I remember that schoolhouse very well. We took our own water cup for to drink the water. You know, we took our own cup. Now this is my family. That's my wife on the left, and of course there's me and my son Joel and my daughter Joan. That's just a few years ago. And as everybody says, you know, they don't look too bad when they're cleaned up. So that's us. And when I got married to Mary, that was one of the best things I ever did. And that's 1960. Now, why did I wait until 1960 to get married? You know, went into the service at the end of my senior first semester in my high school. I enlisted in December of 1943. I entered service, it began January 1944. And that meant I only had 3.5 years of high school, but I had enough credits to graduate. So when I went to the Navy, I didn't see too many girls. We went to Pearl Harbor, we went to Farragut, Idaho, we had radio school in Farragut, Idaho, came back home, so forth, and then got shipped out to Pearl Harbor. So I didn't see too many girls along the way. And so when I got married, it was kind of late. I had 2 wars under my belt when I got married. That's my oldest sister and my youngest sister. And my wife's 2 brothers, her 2 brothers that she liked the best. Now, she didn't like her older brother, so he wasn't in the picture. And the amazing part about it, he's the only one still living. And these are the 4 Cox brothers of my family. That's Jimmy on the left, he died. That's Sam sitting down there in the front, and he died. And that's George, and that's me. So the 4 of us, and only 2 of us are left. Sam and Jimmy both died from cancer. This is the Cox family. Now my mother and father had 9 kids. Plus they had 1 or 2 that died at childbirth. But the thing is, this is a Cox family. There's 9 of us there. There's George, and there's Virgil Bell, and Julia, and Anna Mae, and me, and come back with Jimmy, and then there's Hazel, and my mother, my dad, and Lucille. Lucille was an afterthought. She came along a long time after everything else. Yes, Sam in his right-hand stand. Now, George, he was born in Arkansas. Sam was born in Oklahoma. Now, how did we get Sam in Oklahoma? That's a good question. Julia was born in Chandler, California. And so some of those kids were born in different places, but most of us were either born in Arkansas or born in California. Then, of course, we had some of the offspring. Now, one of the things that we really did, we really lived together as a family. And then when we came from Arkansas to California, we came in a car. Now, we didn't have 9 of us at that time, but we had quite a few. Plus, my grandmother on my dad's side stayed with us all the time. She was always with us. And when her husband died, she moved in with my dad. And this is the Melvin Cox family, and he used always like to be called M.B. And when he signed anything, it was always M.B. Everybody called him Bert. And somebody, everyone in the call him Berg, and he hated that. Now these are the only four of us that are still living. My sister on the left, Anna Mae, she's the second oldest one. And there's me, I'm the oldest boy. I was the third child of the line. And there's George, and my youngest sister, Lucille. Those are the only ones that are still living. Now my youngest sister worked for Fresno Big Fair, Fresno District Fair for many, many years. And she was very, very good. She was a secretary, graduated Fresno State, and she was a secretary for the association there. And they had a little honor section they had going there, but it's all men. They're all men. And she was the only girl that was ever honored with this award that they gave out for this particular thing. And they had horse racing there, so they gave her a replica of the horse, and they honored her with putting her on that honorary board for the directors. She was really good at that. Now then, when I went to elementary school, in Pembroke, California, I went to elementary school. First I went to Reedley Elementary School, and that was kind of a blank year, or 2 years, I don't know how many. But anyway, it's kind of blank. Then we moved around. We moved around a lot. But when we first came to California, we moved over to Makeford, and we lived in a tent for a year or so. Then we moved into Reedley, San Joaquin River, then we lived in a tent, and finally we got a house in Reedley itself, and that's when we started the elementary school. Up until that time, we didn't go to school. This is a family, not the family, but this is a picture of me. And if you notice there, right there, that's me. You know, and then that was elementary school in Neverland. We moved 8 times in 1 year around in that area. And that kept us going. Sometimes we moved in the same place, same school district twice. So near Valencia, Mount Ali, Waikoki, all the schools in that area there, and we moved into some of those many, many times. One thing about those elementary schools, they had a system, and I thought it was really a great system. They had a bank person come out every week, and he had established a bank deposit with us, bank account with us, and every week they'd come out and take the money and deposit it into our account. So I thought that was really neat, and it's kind of unique. This is when I graduated to the Waikiki school and moved around. And this woman here, she handled 7th and 8th grade, and this is Kenaria. She was a great teacher, you know, and I really loved that teacher. He did a good job for me. And during that time in Naval Engine, when I was there, I read 40 books. That wasn't 40 books like you read nowadays, make a report to come in and give the title and stuff, and write a couple of things down. You had to go out there and you had to tell a class what you had read and what it was all about. And that was quite a chore. And that reading certificate there shows there about from the shows 40 books that I read that year. And having to read those books and then give a report on it was quite a chore. But it's different. That's me in a high school picture. Probably people won't recognize that, but that is me. In fact, I didn't recognize it myself when I looked at it the other day. Then, of course, when I got into high school, I got into sports. In the elementary school in Waikiki, I was in the elementary school too. We went to a track meet, the sectional track meet in Reedley, and we worked there, and I run the 100-yard dash and the 50-yard high hurdles and stuff like that, and was on the relay team. But we didn't do too good. Then when I got into high school, we rode the bus into high school. In 1940, we started high school. And this is Reedley High School. We were working out as a team. I'm on right there on my left-hand side. That's me. The reason I show you those pictures is because if brings in the whole deal. Then in high school, when I moved into Parlier, we moved to Parlier. After 2 years in high school in Reedley, we moved to Parlier. And in Parlier, I started a junior year. That's when I started GORAD. Up until that time, I took all academic subjects, including Latin. Latin 1, Latin 2, and so forth. But when we went to Parlier, I got into vocational agriculture, and I had a real person there that liked to coach, and he liked to coach track. And so this is a little ribbon that I won at a section track meet. This is Los Banos High School up until about 1906. Remember the earthquake in 1906, somewhere around that area where it destroyed San Francisco? It really damaged this high school too. So that high school was built from bricks that were made right on the site of the people in Los Banos. So that was a really nice high school, West Side Union High School. Why was it called West Side? Because it included Dos Palos and Destine and Hillmark, kids from all of those schools. Started in 1897, started with three kids. And now they've got over 2,200. I'm glad to have a new high school. That's me when I got to be the principal of Los Banos High School. One of the jobs that I had as an assistant principal in 1963, when President Kennedy dedicated the San Luis Dam in Los Banos, and people started drifting into the Los Banos by the dozens. In fact, they started drifting in by the thousands. And so the high school was a nice little high school, 200 or 300 kids, and all of a sudden we had 700 or 800 kids. And so we had to go on double session. The juniors and seniors went in the morning, and the freshmen and sophomores went in the afternoon. And I became assistant principal. And that wasn't too good of a job at that particular time because I handled all the discipline. And you know, discipline in high school is not easy. But anyway, I did that. I did all the promotion, all the rah-rah-rah stuff, and that's me trying out there, trying to do my job. Now this is the high school picture, and these are the types of things I used to do. I was the assistant principal. I was the athletic director. I was the head of the counseling and guidance. And I was head of the adult education program. And I ran the junior college program. Modesto Junior College had programs there at night, so I ran that. It's a full-time job. Kept me busy. And the amazing part about it is I never had any high blood pressure until after I retired. Now these are some of the educational tours that we took. I've gone to San Quentin, I've gone to the ones in South Women's Prison. We've seen all of those places. I was a counselor for one of the ones in Sonora. So we hit those prisons and we helped them out. And we had those come. Then in 1981-82, I got transferred to the junior high school principal there. And that's my assistant principal helping me out there. This is a national champion dairy cattle judging team, Future Farmers of America. And this is when they won the state title, 1963 in October, not October, June, in 1963. They won the state title. And he won by 1 point. So 1 point, one vote really does count. And those kids are really good. Now that one in the middle there, no, one of the next to me there, you saw him yesterday. Some of you saw him yesterday, that Ron Simmons. And he's a big wheel and something about the electronic stuff in Texas now. But anyway, that was a really good team. They won the state title. And in California, the champion of the state comes from a school. That's the one that goes to the national. In a lot of the schools, they had the top three individuals. In California, we took the top team from the top school. And that's the way we did it. Those were really good kids. And this is when we won the national championship. We went to Waterloo, Iowa. And that was really a trip because we loaded into a station wagon with four kids, my wife and I, with all of our baggage. And we took the trip from Los Banos to Waterloo, Iowa. It took us, I think, about 3 days. Now, if you don't think that's fun traveling that far with four kids, you got another thing coming. My wife was very good. She took care of them. She kept them in good shape and everything like that. And they were really, really nice kids to be with. But, you know, one of the things that we really had one time, we had a little deal where we had to stay in this hotel. And he only had one room left. You know, after we got the kids situated. We had one room left. And that room had a door that opened both ways. In the bathroom in between, and the room on the other side, that room had the same thing. So during the night, sometimes that guy would be coming over and going to the bathroom, and my wife, being a finicky person that she was, you know, that, she just didn't sit like that. So she used to lock those doors. And about every 2 or 3 hours, the manager would come down and he says, "You got to unlock that door. You know, that guy has to use the bathroom." And so we got through that, but it wasn't easy. This again is, yes, this is the national champion team. That's Anthony Silva, Portuguese, sophomore. Ron Simmons was a sophomore. And Frank Miranda, Portuguese, was a sophomore. And there I was. Proud deal. One of the things that when we got notified that we were the champion, this banquet, they had a large banquet there, had all the states there. I think 48, 49 states were there. And they were calling out all the names, and they called out the third place team, and I was smoking a cigar, and I smoked about 12 cigars a day at that time. And then they called out the second place team, and I turned to my wife Mary and I said, "Well, I guess we didn't get anything." And then they called out Los Banos, first place team, national champion, you know, and if you've never been a national champion, you just don't know how it feels. When we got home, we had all kinds of parades, we had celebrations, we had banquets, we had the mayor, we had the district superintendents, and we had the district supervisor, all there, you know, paying attention to this team that won the national championship, because that was the first Los Banos team that had ever won a national championship. In fact, that was the first time that California had ever won a national championship there. So it was really a big deal. Now then, in California, if you want to teach ag, you had to go through a process. And they only had two universities that taught teachers for ag. The University of California at Davis and Cal Poly at San Luis Obispo. Now, the reason I didn't go to Davis because, you know, I looked at the schedule and I looked at the things that you had to take in Davis, and you had to take more chemistry than I wanted to take. And I hated chemistry. Chemistry 1A, I could hardly wait to get out of that. Inorganic chemistry, I got into that, and that wasn't really too bad. But when I looked at it, I said, wait a minute. I looked at Cal Poly's requirements, and I looked at Davis's requirements, and Cal Poly didn't have that second class, second semester of organic chemistry. I said, ooh, that's for me. So I went to Cal Poly. Cal Poly was, at that time, was all boys school. That's when you notice that I miss girls every once in a while because all boys. And, you know, when that came around, that's the way we went. That's the group of ag teachers. Now, when I finally got going, and I started working on Cal Poly and started teaching July the 1st, 1955, in Los Angeles, California. They paid me $4,980 for the year. And I was on a 12-month contract to take care of and charge of the Vocational Agriculture Department. And these are the education deals that I went through, the employment areas. I worked for Pan American Airways in Fairbanks, Alaska for a year after I got out of the service, year two. farm for a couple of years, found out I couldn't make it. And one day I was picking peaches. And picking peaches, you know, that fuzz gets on you and you kind of make your ears a little bit like that and so forth. And those peaches are really great, but it's really hot. It's 108 degrees in the shade. And of course there was no shade. And the humidity would kill you. And we went to work at 6 o'clock, and if you weren't wet all over by 6:45, you weren't doing the job. So I was working there, and I was working in this orchard, and I had this peach, really a beautiful peach, you know, really a nice peach that came out of it. I walked down that ladder and stepped down there, stepped on the bottom step, and I ate that peach. And I was thinking to myself, why am I here? Why am I here? And my vocational agriculture teacher had been talking to me about going to school. He kept pushing it. And so the next day, after that, I went to Reedy College. And I registered, and I started at Reedy College. And that's when I really started getting into shape. But in the meantime, we worked on the Pan-American World Airways, Fairbanks, Alaska. We handled all the traffic, shortwave traffic for the Air Force at that particular time, for rescue anywhere north, we handled that. And the Northern Lights really bothered us sometimes. Sometimes for a 15 or 20 word message, it took us 2 or 3 hours to get it through because of the Northern Lights playing top with you. You know, really shakes up everything. Now this is what I did in the off time, train grapes. You know, you talk about raisins, raisins that are in those cookies that you ate. This is the first start for the start. You pick those things off the vine, you put them on this tray, they stay out there for several days, they dry, then they roll them up, you know, they'll stay there for several more days, then they take them in and they box them into big boxes and they let them sweat for a while. So that's what we did. Earn money. I could trade 500 trays a day, and that was a magic number. Not too many people could beat me on that. That area was really good for them. Then I was in charge, and I helped organize the Modesto Junior College. Now, Modesto Junior College had one of the best vocational programs in the world at that particular time. And they had an evening program that was really good tops. And if you don't recognize me, that's me in the, right there. And that was the president of Stanislaus State University. He was teaching a course for me. And we did those courses for Modesto Junior College. We started that program. My wife and my sister-in-law took all the flyers around town, and we got people to come to school. This is my military record. That's the Batfish, you know, and all the things that she did. She did most of the things before I got on her. When I got on her, they said, well, that's enough, Joe. So she was really a good boat. And if you're ever in Muskogee, Oklahoma, that's where she's at. And we saw her in 1990, and I was really, really, really disappointed in how bad she looked. She looked really lonesome out there. You know how you turn around and you see people and they look lonesome and they look like they're lost? And that's the way the Batfish was. She was just lonesome out there. And she is in really bad shape. And so the people have been working on her since then, and now they've got her in pretty good shape. So if you see her now, you'll find out that she's in pretty good shape. So if you get a chance to see the old Batfish, Sugar Sugar 310, and go to Muskogee, Oklahoma and take a look at her. That's me when I first went into the Navy. Went into Farragut, Idaho. They took us by train from Fresno. My dad, my brother took me to Fresno from Reedley, which is about 25 miles. Got on a train there, troop train. We traveled through the hills of California and Idaho and so forth. And that's the first time I'd ever been on a train. And of course, been away from home. But they shipped us to Farragut, Idaho, And when we got there, they loaded us on these cattle cars. They loaded us on these cattle cars because the train went right into the station there at the Farragut. And they loaded us on these cattle cars and they took us to the barracks. And as we got off the train and got into these cattle cars, sailors were lined up on the side of the street there, and snow was about 6 feet deep. And they were saying, "You'll be sorry. You'll be sorry." You know, and so I never really was sorry, but I was scared sometimes. Northern Idaho was a good place to be. I loved it. I loved that place because after the snow melted, you know, it was really beautiful. That's me in radio school. I went to radio school at Northern Idaho. And that was a long time. It took me a long time to get through that like everybody else. I had one advantage with them because I had taken typing in high school. And to take radio school in the Navy, you have to learn typing too, because you know you took the message through your ears and you typed it out on a typewriter. Then I got shipped out. And when I got shipped out, I shipped out on a troop ship from Treasure Island. I got shipped from San Diego, went to a submarine school in San Diego, California, and most of the people went to Groton, Connecticut submarine school. But no, they had sent me to California in San Diego. And so I went to submarine school in San Diego, and we took that train when we got out of submarine school. We took the train to Mare Island, and we took the train to the submarine base there at Mare Island. And not knowing your system and being a kid, and I was a kid at that particular time, and growing up with all these people and this things like that, I didn't realize all of the ropes, and I didn't realize all this connection. But you know what, Mare Island was a submarine base. And they had me working there in the officer's quarters. They had me working in the radio on the base there. And I was thinking to myself, why am I here? Y'all want a boat. Y'all want to get on a boat. And you know, they had those boats there by the dozens. That's where they were. Their island was a submarine base. But anyway, I went into submarine headquarters one day. And I said, look, you know, this war is really coming down to a close. And I still haven't gotten out of the state. And the next day, they sent me to Treasure Island. And at Treasure Island, they put me on a troop ship. And on that troop ship was everybody and his brother. And one of the nice things about going over to Pearl in a troop ship is you saw these flying fish. That's the first time I'd ever seen flying fish. You know, they saw those fish flying out there, just a beautiful sight. Then we saw Diamond Head, and next thing you know, we're in Pearl Harbor. But it took us about 3 days. And the Orion was one of the Orion was the repair ship. Now, the submarines had all of these repair ships, the submarine service, and what they did is they carried a full complement of people that could do anything, machinists, electricians, and if a sub needed anything at all, supplies, they had it. So they put me on the Orion, which is an AS-18 submarine tender, and then from the Orion, we went to Saipan. Saipan seemed to be the hellhole of the Pacific. Nothing there, but nothing. Then I caught the batfish from the Orion, and the day before I caught the batfish, we worked in the radio shack and did all the stuff that the regular crew did, but we were in what they call a submarine relief crew. And the day before, I got assigned to the bonefish. So I've been very happy because, you know, the submarine people, the reason that you volunteer for submarine duty is because you want to get on a submarine. And so I went up to the radio shack, and I was dragging to him, yeah, I got a boat, I got the bonefish. And it was a second class radio man that had been working with me and working with us on that. And he went down there and he just blew his top. You know, he said, how come you got a boat and I didn't? You're a seaman and I'm a second class radio man. I said, I don't know, but these are my orders. And so he went down to submarine headquarters, and I got shifted off the Bonefish. Don Fox. I will never forget that name. Because the Bonefish didn't come back. She was one of the 52 that we lost in World War II. The submarine service had the highest loss of any of the fighting forces. We had the highest percentage losses. But the Bonefish didn't come back. She was next to the last boat that was lost in World War II. But anyway, I was very happy afterwards that I got the Badfish. So every time I go through and see these memorials, and I look at all these boats, and I see the Bonefish, and I look at that crew of the Bonefish, all the one I always look for, I look down that line, just Don Fox, second class regiment. And I thank him, to myself, I thank him for bumping me. This is the Badfish. Now, like I said, the Badfish was very, very lonesome there at Muskogee. And if you get a chance to go see her, she's in pretty good shape now. Oh, yeah. When I got out of service in World War II, the naval recruiter, must have been a recruiter because the guy that was checking me out, that shoemaker there, he was checking me out and doing all this paperwork and all this stuff. And he said, "Joe, why don't you stay in the reserve?" I don't want to stay in the reserve. He said, "Joe, when you get out and you stay in the reserve and you happen to get called back, which you probably won't, you'll come back in the submarine service. That way you're protected." And so finally he convinced me after about a half hour. So I stayed in the reserve. Son of a gun. In 1950, I got called back in. But what did they do? They put me on a destroyer. Now, a destroyer and submarines don't mix. Because those destroyers are really sub-killers. And so when I got on a McDermott Dog 677, and they would really rush me down there. They rushed me through the whole shebang. They pulled me back in, and I had been going to Cal Poly now for a quarter. I transferred from junior college down to there in the third grade. And when I got down there, they pulled me out of school. And I said, "Well, wait a minute now. I'm here. This is my starting at first quarter at Cal Poly. Cal Poly was on a quarter basis. I have to go until December, until the first quarter is over, then I won't lose all my credits." So they did that. Then they rushed me down to Long Beach. Now they couldn't wait to get me down to Long Beach, because they could have put me on a train or something like that, or even on a bus, but no, they had to fly me down. So I stayed in the airport there in San Francisco for 4 days. I could have been down there doing a lot of duty between that. But no, they just had to get me down there. This is our radio school. And in radio school, they asked us, along about graduation time, they said, "Does anybody want to get into the submarine service?" And of course, everybody at that particular time, they really wanted to do that, because that was a different time of the century. So 100 of us volunteered. Out of this group and right here, 100 people volunteered. And they selected 5. I was one of the 5. I left out. I was lucky. I've been lucky all my life. I think they should have made me lucky. Now, when I was telling you about Camp Scott and so forth in Fairgood, Idaho, naval training station there, base, I went back to there in 1990. And my God, I couldn't believe it. I was so disappointed. My wife and I, we were looking for Camp Scott. We were looking for these bases. We had about 5 or 6 of them. Every one of them was there. Had a full complement of crews at that particular time. One of the largest naval training stations in the world. And I finally found Camp Scott. And that's all that was left of it. And all that was left of any of those camps was the brig. the jail. That was the only thing that was left. Everything else is back to the deal. This is just some of the things that I did as a veteran. I've been busy. One of the first things we did when I got to be the Veterans of Foreign Wars post commander in Las Vegas, and we worked to get the monument. You know how your historical markers that you get around here? This is the historical marker for Las Vegas. Now, in Las Vegas, we had the Veterans of Foreign Wars post 2487. We had American Legion post 166. And we had the Ladies Auxiliary of the Veterans of Foreign Wars. And for some reason, those three groups could never get together because they had been trying to get a monument for the submarine, for veterans, not submarine veterans, but for veterans for many, many years. And they just couldn't do it. They kept working at it. And when I got to be the post commander, and we started working at it, they said, you'll never do it, Joe Cox. And I said, well, let's try. But it took us almost 2 years, you know, because of the animosity between the women and the men and the American Legion and the VFW, they were just there. So we finally got together and we built this monument here to the veterans in the Las Vegas area. That's my wife. Now in the Korean War, the Koreans are very, very grateful for what we did. They really are, the South Koreans. Now not the North, but the South. Of course, the North, you know, in the North, we used to go up there and bomb them all the time and shoot them. We'd shoot everything that we could see. We'd shoot railroads, we'd shoot them. And they were shooting back, too, you know. They'd have those little guns that they'd come out of the tunnel and shoot you and then move it back in. So we went into Wonsan Harbor one time, and we shelled them for about three or four hours. And the Koreans were really grateful that we went over there and did the things for them. And this year handing us a little medal here. This is me, that woman, she came down from San Francisco and here. She's one of the people, she came from South Korea to do that. This is me as a post commander. The reason I say that, because the post commander in Las Vegas is a very powerful person. We do a lot of good things around the community. We work very hard with teachers, we work very hard with the kids, and we work very hard with the city itself. So, you know, that's something that we really do. And this is a parade in Fresno. Fresno has one of the largest veterans parades now in the country. And this is, look at this, this is what they call the big and the short. Now this is me on the short end. And that's the national commander. And he and I were in the same year as district commanders. He was a district commander of District 17, and I was a district commander of District 11. So we got together, because he was a very nice guy, and we got together, and I says, hey, how about a picture? He says, okay. And I forgot that, you know, he was so much bigger than I was. Then we worked together as veterans, and what did we do? We helped the community out, and we built a little monument there at the fairgrounds for veterans. And on there, we had all the veterans listed that wanted to be listed. And that's me when I was running for office. Community service, open door policy, education for all, and so forth. So that was my campaign poster. That was developed by the editor of the Las Vegas Enterprise at that particular time. She developed that for me, and I thought it was a pretty good deal. So I used it every once in a while. And then my daughter lived in Lafayette, and going up there, a lot of times I babysit with the grandkids, and sometimes I just go up there and see them. And my daughter is kind of into politics too, so she had a chance to see Karl Rove at that time, and so we went to the Lafayette deal there, and there was Karl, and so we got to see him. We bought his book, and he autographed it for us, and he talked to us. It took them a long time to build a monument of World War II for World War II veterans. And this is it. I got to go to the dedication. I hooked up with a group from Turlock, and we got to go down there, and we got to see that. And we got to see the dedication. George Lewis came out and did this little spiel, and a lot of other people, politicians came out there, but that was a really nice deal. And this, I got to talk to Bob Dole. I know some of you may remember Bob Dole. I got to talk to Bob Dole about it and how things are going. And then I got to talk to Tom Brokaw. Tom Brokaw, you remember, says, and that's the way he is, you know, and I'm sticking to it. That's him right there. And he was there at that the dedication of the World War II Memorial. And I got to talk to him quite a bit. He's a nice guy. Right now, these are the national officers of the submarine veterans of World War II. In September, we'll be going back to Norfolk, Virginia to disband the submarine veterans of World War II. Not because of any particular reason, but except that they are now getting a little older. I'm one of the youngest ones at 86, and I'll be 87 in October. But right now they're either on oxygen, or they are in a hospital, or they can't walk, or they got a shoulder, or they got crutches, or what have you, or they can't breathe. You know, they're just, these are the best four of the whole bunch right now. We are four of us are still kicking. Our national president now is Walt Cross there. He's from Ohio. Then you have Bob Burst from Sacramento. And Bob Burchill there is from, Bud Burchill from Gilroy. And then there's me as the national vice president now. And I'm also the state commander. So that's the officers that are running the submarine vessel in World War II. And in September 2nd, we'll start the national convention. And before we leave there, we will disband the submarine veterans in World War II. And as a state commander, there's a lot of submarine memorials that we built. This one is at San Joaquin Valley National Cemetery. We lost 52 boats, and from the first time that the submarine service was initiated, we lost 65 boats. So we planted 65 trees and 65 markers there. At the San Joaquin Valley National Cemetery on the entrance. They're beautiful trees. They're really beautiful now. If you ever get in that area, you'll come by and see those. And there's me in my great uniform, ready to roll. This is something that's unique. You just don't see this. This is Fresno State University. This is 65 trees that we planted at Fresno State. We had the president of Fresno State there help us do that. And that's a little monument there. It's right there at the walkway. You just can't miss it. It's the most visible spot as the people come from the parking lot into the building and stuff like that. Just really nice. It's on the Fresno State University campus. It's the only submarine memorial that I know of that's on a university campus. And we did that. Now there's me, and we had a board there that has all the stuff about submarines. This was done by a junior high kid from Bakersfield. And he did this as a project. And they were going to dump it, and they're going to throw it away. And so I talked to the guy that was in charge down there. I said, hey, don't do that. You know, that's really neat. And so finally he got him to do that, and so we saved it. And right now that's in the Fresno Museum. So we had that all over the state. We traveled all over there. Really nice little display board done by junior high kids. That's a person from our Veterans of Foreign Wars. She did a little pantry of all of the things that I had done, tied them all together. Then we Rotary Club International. I was a district governor. Of Rotary International District 522. And then my wife and I are sitting right there at the right there is my wife and there's I. And this is in Salt Lake City. That's when we first got initiated into Rotary as a leadership. And we worked that out pretty good. Mary was really good at that. And she was a good partner. And our year was honor Rotary with faith and enthusiasm. Now, Rotary in Los Angeles does a lot of good things. And the reason I bring it out is because We give scholarships. We help the Boys and Girls State, all those different types of things. But we do a lot of community service in Los Banos. And Mary and I there, we got to meet the national president, international president, and his wife there. And this is in Texas. I think it's in Dallas. And we met somebody there from Dallas that took us all around, showed us the Cowboy Stadium in Arlington and so forth, Irvington. Showed us the Cowboy Stadium, took us out to a nice restaurant for a big steak and fed us, and just really a nice person. Cliff Dockerman was the national president. There's my wife. She adored him. He's one of the great speakers of all time. And we have what we call a student exchange program. And a student exchange program, we bring groups of kids over, and we send groups of kids over there. This is a group from Russia. And we were at Yosemite National Park, and they're working there. These are Russian kids come over there to work out. And what did we do at Yosemite National Park? We took all of the things that were not native to Yosemite, and we were taking them out. We spent a whole weekend there working on those different types of things, taking all the stuff out that didn't belong in that park, wasn't native. And that was a hard weekend, but it's something that we really enjoy doing. And Yosemite National Park, if you've never been there, you've missed something, because that's really a nice park. We worked hard at that. This is my wife, and we always have a team come from some other country to visit with us in our district, and then we send a team over to one of their countries. And this is my wife with a team from Spain. And this is just something that service to Los Banos Rotary Club. There's me. I'm a California senior legislator. A senior legislator is the one that is elected by your peers, just like the regular legislature. I am from District 31, PSA 31, and I am a senior senator from the Merced area. And what we do is we take care of proposals for seniors. And we make these proposals, and we go to Sacramento, and we try to get the legislature to pass laws to promote these proposals. Now, last year, we had a really nice proposal. There, I'm a retired teacher president there, and I was a membership chairman one year. This is a proposal that we had last year. It passed by the legislature of the state of California, and what it did is it set November as a senior center month for California. And that was kind of nice getting it done. And that was me handling the Senate side. And that wasn't easy. Then I worked with AARP. AARP does a lot of things that nobody likes, but they do a lot of things that people do like. So I worked with them once in a while. And there's me on the assembly side. That's my name, COX. Remember that name? Now, I don't know how it came about, but I got a chance to help commission the USS Naupnagaal. Now, people don't realize the submarine service sent two boats full of Marines to Mackinac Island, just like the Doolittle Raiders. Remember those? And those Marines went over to Mackinac Island on the two boats. And that was really a tough deal. And I happened to be a part of the commission of that ship that did that. That's me. I have a little history. And I got honored by being nominated into the Hall of Fame for the history department for the Los Banos High School. And then I helped set the first watch for the USS California. SSN 781. That was in Norfolk, Virginia. And setting the first watch is a naval tradition, where there's first watch for a naval boat that's being commissioned. And so I got to hand them the long glass, and I was only a civilian on that board. I don't know how many admirals I met in that time, more than I did in all my service time. And I met the chief of naval operations. I got to talk to him several times. And one chief of naval operations for the Pacific, and of course the Alliance. The little certificate. These are the grandkids. Adrian is the tallest one there, then the Justine is the grandkid. The other boy, they're twins. Two and a short ones. I'll be seeing those next month. And we took a trip in 1990 back to Ione and to the Fox family reunion, and we took those kids with us, Joni and I. And this is my wife and I and Joel, and we're seeing Joni off. Joni spent her junior year at Fresno State in Spain, Madrid, University of Madrid. And this is Joni in a wedding. She was the first one that got married in a new Catholic church. And that was a really nice deal. And there's my son Joel. He loves to be dressed up once in a while, but you never see him like that more than once. And he loved to ride a motorcycle. He drove my wife and I nuts. And I think that's where I started getting my high blood pressure, because he drove he raced those motorcycles. You know, that's not real. Now, both of my kids, they went through the 4-H program, they went through the FFA program, and he did really well. And this is Joel, was one of his peers. This is a motorcycle that he used to race with. And that's my old pickup. I finally got rid of that. And this is the grandkids and my daughter, Joan, when we dedicated a new junior high school when I was a board member. And those are three kids. Three of us went, we took a trip throughout the United States, over 6,000 miles. We went from Los Banos to all across the United States. We saw everything that people mentioned. Well, you might see that. Well, we'd go, even though it was 500 or 600 miles out of the way. And we went to Bar Harbor, Maine. And I'll tell you one thing, I'll never forget that trip. And these were giant. That's Glenn. Glenn was, at the time we were on the back fish, Glenn was 21 years old. We call him the old man. I don't know what that is. Oh, that's radio store. Yeah. I'll pass that, no problem. I have, in my front yard I love poppies. And they make a beautiful deal there. And those poppies are really, really, really pretty. They're like this. But then when they sort of seed and everything starts to die off, they look like heck. And right now, with the Knights of Columbus, and that's with my uniform there, what we do is we do funerals and we do graduations and we do commencements and stuff like that. And there I am at home, and that's me. And for that, I really appreciate what you have kept your silence, and I appreciate having you here with us today, and I appreciate being here today. So with that, I'm going to call it this.
That is the stuff of family history. Take a 10-minute break. Be back by 11:15, and we'll hear our final speaker of this reunion. 11:15. Jerry, there's plenty of questions.
Get it off of there now. Thank you.
Don't take